Let's have a listen to a 1970s US band called Sail Cat. The song is called Motorcycle Mama.
In the soft green grass and in the squares, won't buy, we'll let them pass. You'll be the queen of my highway, my motorcycle mama. We'll see the world from my Harley. And maybe in a year or two, we'll have a little one. She'll look just like you. We'll add on a sidecar, electric guitar. It will be a trio. The baby makes 3-0. Tell your daddy and your mama too. You got something better to do. Stick around the house the rest of your life. You're 18, you can be my wife. You be the queen of my highway, my motorcycle mama. And we'll see the world from my Harley. We'll see the world from my Harley. We'll see the world from my Harley. If the chain don't break.
American band Sail Cat, Motorcycle Mama. Nice song to introduce Heather Ellis. Good morning, Heather.
Oh, good morning, Brian.
How are you?
I'm wonderful.
Where are you from in Australia?
Well, I sort of grew up several places. Outback South Australia on a sheep station, and then far north Queensland, up around Cairns and Port Douglas and Townsville. And then I was working up in Kakadu, on the fringe of Kakadu National Park in the Northern Territory.
Now, you've done two, what I would call, marathon motorcycle, solo motorcycle trips. When did you get interested in motorcycles?
When I was in outback South Australia, my parents were mining opal near Cooper Pedy, and my aunt and uncle owned a sheep station. So we were based on this sheep station, Ingamar, and we were... All the kids were riding around on Honda Z50s, little mini bikes. And so that's, it all started from there. I just loved riding motorcycles and just continued right through my life. And when I was working in Kakadu for Ranger Uranium Mines, instead of buying a car, I bought a Honda XL185. And, just continued on from there. And then... when I was working at the mine, living in Jabiru, and I was sitting around with my mates at a barbecue one Sunday afternoon, and I just blurted out, wouldn't it be great to ride a motorcycle across Africa? And, you know, and I haven't looked back, you know. It's just continued on, from Africa and through Central Asia and down through China to Hanoi.
And some people might think of doing that. You did it. I find it quite amazing. Literally to head off on your own as a woman from bottom of Africa right up to the top. Tell us a little about that trip.
So I was riding a Yamaha TT600 and I went by cargo ship to over to Durban in South Africa. Actually, I started travelling with a travelling companion, but we never got on, and that was just really awful for the first couple of months of the trip. So he left Africa, and I sort of say to people, if they do want to go on any kind of travelling adventure, and they don't have someone to go with and they think, oh, I don't want to go on my own, I just say go anyway. If you go with the wrong person, it can turn into your worst nightmare. And you always meet people on the way. There's so many people traveling, and often being on your own, people will come to you and talk to you because you're on your own. So that's what I found on my travels through Africa and everywhere I went.
How long did it take you to go from bottom to top?
It was about 14 months.
Wow.
And yeah, and that was like 42,000 kilometers in about 19 countries. And from that journey, I wrote my first book, Ubuntu, One Woman's Motorcycle Odyssey Across Africa. And people think, oh, what does Ubuntu mean? Well, it's an African word from South Africa, from the Bantu tribe, and it means I am because we are. So it's a word that says that we're all connected, that we're the community and helping each other. And that's, I called the book Ubuntu because that's how I was treated in Africa. The people were very kind and helpful to me, always wanted to feed me and give me somewhere to stay. And
there's a version of Unix called Ubuntu.
That's right.
Quite common. And yeah. I now know where they got the name from.
Yeah.
Thank you. So you then did London to Hanoi. How long did that take?
That was about a year. I left London in November 96. I'd been working as a motorcycle courier in London from when I arrived there in sort of October 94. And it was a great experience. It's sort of like how I really learned to ride a motorcycle to that. You know, took my motorcycle riding skills to the next level. And so I didn't want to do another winter in London. So in November 96, I then rode over to Austria and worked in a ski resort, which is a fantastic experience. You just, you know, in the mountains, in the snow, go skiing every day. And then from there in April 97, I started the trip through Central Asia, which is like from Italy down through Greece, Turkey, Georgia, Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, all the stands, Kyrgyzstan, Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan.
But did you have problems getting in and out with visas and things like that?
I was really lucky at the time because I had a one-month Russian visa. And I sort of met a Russian girl in London, so I got a letter of recommendation. So when I was in Istanbul, I took that letter with, or a letter of like introduction. So I took that letter with me to the Russian embassy, and then a week later I got my visa. And at that time, like, so this was sort of beginning of 97, or summer of 97, the fall of the Soviet Union was in December 91, but the Russians were still kind of manning the immigration and customs at the border checkpoints. So if you had a Russian visa, they let you through. And the borders were also quite, like, kind of relaxed compared to those. It was just like a small little building or a hut or something and a little tiny boom gate, which some border crossings was actually up and nobody was at the border crossing. So today, you know, you have to have a visa for every country, and some of these, some are quite difficult, like Turkmenistan. You get like a 5-day transit visa, and it's just to get you through across Turkmenistan. You can't like travel around and explore. So yeah, and then in Kazakhstan, you could get visas for like China, you know. I got my Russian visa extended. You could get visas for like all the other countries. So it was really quite easy back then. It was, you know, travelers were quite unknown. Like when I traveled through, I didn't see any other independent travelers other than three Frenchmen riding their motorcycles, and I teamed up with them for about a month of when I was traveling. But it was independent travelers, particularly ones on a motorcycle, were real novelty at that time.
You could be a person who's gone through more countries in that length of time than anybody else ever on this planet.
No. There's some people out there who've been travelling. They just haven't stopped. They're like been travelling 10 years on the road. Yeah, no, I'm I'm nowhere near.
You released your book Timeless on the Silk Road in 2019.
Yeah.
What have you been doing since then? I mean, COVID would have been a big factor.
Yeah, well, that it was April 2019, and like I had a lot of author talks planned, and you know those writing festivals I was going to and to speak at, and then COVID, and then everything was cancelled. So, so that it hasn't sort of really, you know, all those author talks and writing festivals, I haven't kind of gone back and said, well, here I am, let's, you know, can we have me back? So what have I been doing in the meantime? Well, I'm a mother to three boys, teenage boys. Yeah, I work in communications. Recently I was invited over to a motorcycle adventure travel festival in the UK, the Overland event, where I was very, very fortunate that Triumph also gave me a Thruxton, a Triumph Thruxton RS1200, the brand new one to ride while I was in the UK, which was an amazing experience.
An electric bike?
No, was a petrol. I've got the Thruxton 900 at home in Victoria, but mine's 10 years old. I just really love riding that around and exploring the UK. And if people here complain about petrol prices, just go over to the UK. It's the same, but in pounds, so it's actually double the price. So, yeah. Yeah, a litre of petrol is £1.85. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Now, you've got a big trip you're planning, another one, number three?
Yeah, so when my boys have all sort of like left school and started uni, so it's been about 3 years' time, so I've got an 18-year-old and I've got twins that are 15. So the idea, and I've already told them now that, you know, I'm going to take off and go travelling again, so I'll dust off my trusty Yamaha TT600, which is in my shed, and pack it up, and off we'll go to, from here, from Victoria over to New Zealand, and then one of my bucket list things is to put me in the bike on a ship to Antarctica, and there's a trip that you can do, from New Zealand. It takes a month. You go down to Antarctica and you just, sail around the shelf, and then go up to Ushuaia in South America, and that whole thing takes a month. So you get off on the ice and, you know, like have a look at the penguins and the walruses and all the other things. And yeah, like I think it'll just be an amazing experience. And, so from there, from, Ushuaia in the bottom of, Argentina, then travel north basically through South America. I'm not exactly sure which way, just that's kind of how I travel. There's no like time limit, just go where it sort of feels right and where the roads are and where people recommend I go, because as you're traveling you're always meeting people that say, oh, you should go and see this, or you should go and see that, or this is a great road, and then you might meet up with people and travel with them for a while, and that's the kind of thrill of adventure motorcycle traveling, that you just don't know what's going to happen. You know, pack up your bike in the morning and you really don't have any idea where you're going to be at the end of the day or what's going to happen. But you always like get off the road before dark.
If you're going to start at the bottom of South America, where are you going to end?
We'll be in sort of North America, like LA, which is where I'll probably have a bit of a break and come back to Australia and make sure that everything's fine with my kids, which they'll be adults by then, so they can really look after themselves, write the third book on South America, and then go back and then do North America. So this will be my retirement, like just travelling.
Now, you're in Tasmania at the moment. Why are you here?
Well, I came down here to just see my good mate Damien Cotadolo, and I got to test ride BMW's new electric scooter. So it's a 400cc electric scooter, and I had that for 2 days and just toured around Hobart, went down to Kettering and rode some of the nice roads in that area through the hills, and loved every moment of it. It's a great bike. It's a lot of fun. It's got very responsive and it's electric. So for me, it was like just getting a glimpse into the future, looking at all the other cars on the road and all the other motorcycles, and they just feel ancient. They feel like dinosaurs. You feel really, thrilled about the future. You feel that the future is really bright, and it's just a glimpse, a moment that you have with the future being on this bike. But the big problem that I felt here in Hobart is the lack of motorcycle parking, or the lack of suitable motorcycle parking. Like, you've got this, I live in outside of Melbourne, like an hour outside of Melbourne. So if I didn't work from home and I had to commute, I would buy one of these tomorrow. They're like nearly 22,000 on road. The battery lasts 20 years. You don't have to ever buy any fuel anymore. So the bike would actually, if you're commuting the distance I would have to on this bike, it would pay for itself in 4 years. The servicing for 5 years in total is $750. So you don't have all these other added costs. Yeah, you've got a big layout, but, and then the battery after 20 years, they go into like battery banks where people have solar panels on their houses and they want to store the energy. And I'm sort of saying, well, what happens to them after that? But we actually don't know because we haven't got to that point. But because there's so many minerals in these things, like valuable minerals, they would be recycled. They're not just going to, you know, be dumped somewhere.
Now, the last time I talked to Damien, he was telling me that motorcycles are being manufactured in Australia. Now, it's nice to see manufacturing
Electric,
get a boost in Australia.
Yes, electric motorcycles, yeah. And like in also with footpath parking in Victoria, we can park on footpaths in Victoria. And like Melbourne has a lot of narrow footpaths, so we just don't park there. Like a motorcyclist won't park on a narrow footpath. You need to have like, you know, where you park a metre between the footpath and you, so if a car pulls up, the person can open their car door and get out of their car. And you can't park too close to the wall because people, pedestrians need to be able to get by. So you park where it's suitable. And even though Hobart has got a lot of narrow footpaths, there are footpaths that are suitable. And then the other thing, when I was riding around, I really struggled to see where there was, where you could park a bike. And one place I did see on Macquarie Street, it was actually on a slope, on a slight hill. And that's like really dangerous for a bike because one thing, it's, you know, going to fall over, or when you get back on it, you can't quite touch the ground on the other side because of the angle, you know, the slope of the footpath. So, you know, all of that needs to be sorted out.
Of course, what you find then is motorcycles are parking in car bays.
In fact, a motorcycle
requires a lot less space.
Yeah, and people have to pay for that. So the beauty with footpath parking that we have in Victoria is it's free. So if I ever have to do any meetings and business in Melbourne, I would ride my motorcycle because I can park right out where I need to do my business, go and do it, get back on it and go off somewhere else. Or when I have to work at the office where the company I'm working for, their footpath is very, very wide. But if I drove in, I would be feeding a car meter all day and probably invariably getting a parking ticket because I would forget. But parking on the footpath, and there's heaps of room. There's lots of places, even in Hobart, you know, extended out from the CBD, where people could commute to work, park their electric scooter outside where they work on the footpath where it's quite wide and it's not interfering with any pedestrians. And we're not just talking about Hobart, there's the whole of Tasmania. So when I come over here, say on my motorcycle, to ride around Tasmania, I'm going to be thinking, where can I park my bike? Because you can't park a bike on a footpath in Tasmania. The only state you can do that in Australia is in Victoria.
I mean, there's a little bit of controversy here about those scooters, the battery-powered scooters, but I take the view that if young people want to use them, let them use them. In fact, I've seen some good oldies using them as well. So things are changing and electricity is coming in all over the place.
Yeah.
Good to see it coming into motorcycles. But you're right. Sometimes the environment and the situation that where they park and go to has to change to suit.
Yeah. Yeah. You have to, you know, you've got your scooter, your electric bike, and everything's in line. Everything's working. You're cutting down congestion. You know, if you had 1/3 of the cars on the road today in Hobart, you took them off the road and changed them for an electric scooter, bang, there goes your traffic congestion. It doesn't exist anymore. And you've got all these people in these cars, one person in a car, and they're taking up such a lot of space in that one car. Fair enough, you know, you've got bad weather, but we've got bad weather in Melbourne as well. So you've got the gear, just put the clothes on. And once you're in all the gear, you're fine. You know, you're not going to get wet.
So when are you heading off to your South American, North American trip?
It'll be in about 3 years because my youngest boys, they're twins, they're in year 9. So I'm just sort of waiting for them to finish year 12 and start uni. And like then, you know, I don't need to be getting up and making their lunch every day. And although I shouldn't really be doing that now, really. But I've said to them, you know, I'm going to take off. And these days we've got Zoom and you've got FaceTime. You know, I'll be in the middle of South America somewhere and they'll be, you know, phoning me saying, oh, how long do I cook a roast lamb for?
Heather, thank you for coming in. It's been good to talk. We wish you all the best for the future in your travels. I think you're a little bit mad, but that's good, to be honest.
That's what it's all about.
That's what it's all about. Yeah. You certainly enjoy yourself.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks
for
having me.
This is a song just for you.
flows, it flows to the sea. Wherever that river goes, that's where I want to be. Flow, river, flow. Let your waters wash down. Take me from this road to some other town. All he wanted was to be free, and that's the way it turned out to be. Flow, river, flow. Let your waters wash down. Keep me from this road to some other town. River, flow, past the shaded tree. Go, river, go, go to the sea. Flow to the sea. The river flows, it flows to the sea. Wherever that river goes, that's where I want to be. Flow, river, flow. Let your waters wash down. Take me from this road to some other town.
The Birds, the Ballad of Easy Rider. And Heather Ellis, well, a little bit mad in my opinion, but a courageous, brave lady going on those particular trips. Bottom of South Africa up to the top, then London to Hanoi, and planning to go from Argentina right up to, well, I think it's Alaska or somewhere in 3 years' time. So an adventurer, let's say, and congratulations to her for that.